This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
At the Zen Mountain Monastery, a poem by Rachel Whetstone. A double line of meditators sits on mats, each one a human triangle. Evacuate your mind of clutter now. I do my best, squeezing the static and the agony into a straight, flat line. But soon it soars and dips until my mind's activities look like you can take the girl uncannily like a Manhattan skyline. Observe your thoughts, then gently let them go. I'm watching them all right, unruly dots I not only can't part from, but can't help transforming into restless bodies. They're no sooner being thought than sprouting limbs, no longer motionless, but striding proudly, beautiful mental jukeboxes that play their litanies of joy and woe each day beneath the shadow of enormous buildings. Desires are your jailers. Set them free and roam the hills, smiling archaically. It's not a pretty picture, me amid the high alpine regions in my urban black, huffing and puffing in the mountain air, and saying to myself, I'm trying, but it's hopeless. Though the tortures of the dam make waking difficult, they are my tortures. I want them raucous, and I want them near. Like howling pets, I nonetheless adore, and holler adamant instructions to. Sprint, mad ambition. Scavenge, hopeless love that begs requital. On our evening stroll down Broadway and up West End Avenue. So this is a wonderful evocation of meditation as the attempt to control the uncontrollable. And it's a picture of how we can frame this practice in a way that turns it into a struggle of one part of our mind trying to dominate and master another. And obviously, what we're up to is not trying to flatline all those thoughts and emotions into something calm and unobjectionable, but to create a container for whatever arises. And Rachel does, in the poem, create a container for whatever arises. The poem itself is her version of the discipline that will hold any kind of experience, right? It's where we in our sitting make a sitting out of whatever arises as we sit. Her craft and discipline is to make a poem out of those things. The dilemma, of course, is how each particular discipline flows into the rest of our life, or whether the containment only takes place within the confines of the particular discipline, on the cushion or on the page. What happens when we leave the zendo or put down the pen? Just recently, I heard once again the familiar lament from somebody who had been practicing for many, many years that when they've done long retreats, they've reliably been able to experience a kind of calmness and acceptance and even love and connectedness that's missing from the rest of their lives. But inevitably, when they come back home, those feelings fade away. And the lament is always, why can't I not hold on to those feelings? As if the point of the sesshin was to get high and never come down. See, the imagery of that, the fantasy of practice is that we're creating an internal state. The practice is essentially a mental activity. It's happening inside. And that what matters is we create a certain feeling, a certain mood, certain state of consciousness that's taking place inside our skull, and that we want to have stay in there no matter where we go and what we do, as if where we go, what we do, who we encounter, how we live, has nothing to do with what's going on inside. It's as if the arrow is supposed to be completely unidirectional. I'm going to carry around this frame of mind, and it's going to flow out and fill the world, but it's going to be impervious to the anything that the world may bring to me. But the simple fact is that when you engage in extraordinary disciplines and activities like sesshin, you will have extraordinary mental states. If you don't want to get all woo-woo about it, you can simply say sensory deprivation is a great flavor enhancer. But when you leave those conditions, you're not going to stay in the same mental state. It's simply not going to happen. The question is whether anything of that leads you to reorganize your life around different practices, different pursuits, different ways of doing things that will affect who you are and what condition you're in. If you go out of a retreat and because of what happens there, you stabilize your sitting practice so it becomes more regular, more part of your life, and that your sitting practice is a way in which you see that a certain kind of satisfaction comes from just sitting rather than the pursuit of all sorts of outside things in the way of getting and spending. Then maybe you'll reorganize your life in a way that's more settled, more peaceful. And the interplay of your practice and your life will give rise to something different. That's how practice is going to make a difference in your life. Not that you have a once and for all inner experience that never leaves you. very good analogy would be that practicing Zen is like making your bed every day. It's not just that you end up with a made bed. It's that you become the kind of person who makes their bed every day.